Welcome to The Good Goddess Show, a weekly podcast for women who are fed up, are feeling bloated and tired. I'm your host, Kezia Hall, holistic nutritionist and all-around health geek. Let's dive in to the show. Welcome to episode number 65 of the Gut Goddess Show. Hi, and today we're talking about SIBO and if it is the reason for your IBS and your bloating and for your tiredness. So SIBO is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So I'm going to be talking a little bit about that. So today is more of a geeky, technical, practical episode that we have going on, but it is going to be really, really awesome. I'm going to be sharing with you what IBS is, what the symptoms are, how do you know if you have it, how can you test for it, what do you eat if you do have it, and all of that sort of good stuff. So this is going to be hopefully a total game changer for some of you guys, because if you feel like you've been stuck for a really long time feeling grim and bloated, then do listen in, because this could be you being like, oh my goodness, Kezia, I think this is what is going on with me. Because a lot of the clients I work with, I will be honest with you, and I felt like this as well, a lot of clients I work with feel like they're a bit crazy, that are being a bit dramatic, or it's all in their head, or it's not really real, or whatever it is, because they've been told everything's normal, they've been told everything's fine, but they don't feel fine. And this is when we need to put our little detective hats on and trust our bodies. If you don't feel fine, then there's probably a reason for it. There's probably something going on in your body that means you're bloated and not feeling great and tired. I don't think it is all in your head. Or even that phrase, oh, it's all in your head. Yes, it probably is, but that still doesn't mean it's not valuable and worthwhile, if that makes sense. Even if it is more of a mental health issue going on, that's still really important to deal with. So anyway, that is what we're going to be talking about today. And before we dive in, if you struggle with bloating, maybe you have IBS and that's been diagnosed and you really struggle with that, then I am doing a free workshop on the 24th of June. Sorry, that noise is me just checking on my mouse. But it is. It's the 24th of June. So Monday the 24th at 7:30. And it's going to be called What to Eat to Beat IBS. So if you have IBS or you have IBS type symptoms, are bloated, have digestive issues of any kind, join me in this workshop, What to Eat to Beat IBS. You can find it at supernaturallyhealthy.org/WP/IBS. So supernaturallyhealthy.org/WP/IBS. Or you can find the link into my show notes or head over to my website. I'll have it linked in the menu as a free workshop. So it's going to be a free training workshop. It's going to be about an hour long. I'm going to be talking, diving really, really deep of what are the foods, what are the changes, what are the things you should be eating in order to really help your digestion to beat IBS. Because as you know, I used to have awful IBS and I don't anymore. So I'm on a bit of a mission to help people digest well so that they can have the energy and the confidence and the belly that they want. So make sure you join me there. Otherwise, let's get on with today's show. So today we're talking about SIBO and if that is the reason for your bloating. So don't worry, all will be explained. You might be thinking, what the flip are you talking about, Kezia? But I wanted just to dive in today, kind of following on from my How I Ditched IBS series that I did, just about how I overcame IBS, ditched chronic diarrhea, all of that sort of stuff. And I want to talk about this thing called SIBO, which is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Because I have a lot of conversations with people that have been diagnosed with IBS and maybe really struggling, have really bad IBS, are in a bit of a bad place with that, or people that maybe don't have that official diagnosis yet, or maybe getting other things checked out, you know, at the doctors and by their gastroenterologist. And they often get told everything's normal, you're fine, basically. There's nothing going wrong with you. And that's often how you do get to an IBS kind of diagnosis. So you would often go to the doctors with, say, bloating, maybe a change in your bowel habit. You go to your doctors and they would maybe run checks. You might have a colonoscopy. You would probably have some blood tests to check for inflammatory markers. And once they feel confident that they've ruled out things like Crohn's disease, colitis, all of these sorts of things, and they're not really, you know, there's nothing else obvious going on, that's when you'd end up with this IBS diagnosis. And so what I wanted to talk about today is a bit of a public service announcement around this thing called SIBO, because for some of you, if you feel like you are really struggling and that you're bloating and your stomach is, it's just not good, you know, you've been told everything is normal, and you're really grateful you don't have Crohn's, you're really grateful you don't have colitis and all these other horrible things, but you still just feel like something is wrong with your stomach and it is sort of ruining your life. I know that's a bit dramatic, but that was honestly how I felt. So I want to share with you a little bit about SIBO, just to educate you and let you know that this is a real thing. It's not quite leaked down into our medical kind of National Health Service yet. I think it probably will. It takes on average about 17 years for things to filter from the research into our NHS service, according to a research paper. So, you know, we could be waiting a while. So I want to share a bit about this and what you can do about it and why it could be your ticket for getting out of feeling bloated and uncomfortable and constipated or diarrhea or all your sort of like digestive woes. So if you haven't listened to any of my previous podcasts though about digestion, and like I did on episode 50, so you can catch up about digestion 101 in episode 50, but I want to dive into this today. So let's begin. What the heck is it, and why is this useful information for you? What's this got to do with you? So SIBO, it's short for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. You can also get something called SIFO, which would be small intestinal fungal overgrowth, which I'm not going to go into the ins and outs and nuances of those two things. So it is basically an infection where you would get certain bacteria that would normally live in your large intestine. So remember, you have your small intestine that's attached to your stomach, and then that goes, then it's attached to your large intestine, and you have meters and meters of intestine in your body. So this is like, takes a good length of space. But anyway, so this small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, or SIBO, as I'll call it for the rest of the episode, is where some bacteria from that large intestine migrates kind of backwards up the body and goes into the small intestine and colonizes that area. So you have your large intestine and small intestine, that they're sort of connected by this ileocecal valve. And what would happen is some of the bacteria from the large intestine would kind of creep through, pass through this valve and colonize your small intestine. So that's on a really basic level, roughly what's going on. And this can cause a lot of problems for different reasons. So number one, your small intestine is where you absorb the majority of your nutrients. That's where most of your actual absorption of a lot of your B vitamins and fats and a lot of the stuff that you eat, a lot of the nutrient absorption going on is going to be happening in your small intestine. Your large intestine absorbs a lot of water and a couple of different things, but it's not as much happening. There's other stuff happening basically in your large intestine, and it's your small intestine where you're really absorbing lots of these nutrients. And in order for that to happen, your small intestine needs to be at a relatively alkali pH. So your stomach is really acidic. It needs to be super acidic. So it would be on, you know, on the one end of the pH scale in order to protect the body, break down food, break down proteins, those kinds of things. And then when you're digesting food, moves on from your stomach into your small intestine, you get lots of injections of, not injections, but, you know, spurts. Oh, you have your digestive enzymes and your bile. That helps to change the pH of this kind of partially digested food to make it a bit more alkali, because your small intestine likes a more alkaline environment. I can't remember the pH off the top of my head, but it is different to the stomach. The stomach is a very acidic place to be. And the reason for this is, if you ever remember doing just science at school is that certain reactions require certain pH levels. So certain things can only happen when it's in the right kind of environment. So in order for a correct absorption and optimal absorption of your nutrients, you need a good pH. You need a more alkali pH happening in small intestine. And what these bacteria can do is they migrate from the large into the small intestine. It can change the pH slightly of that intestine, which can be quite problematic, and change the chemical reactions and things taking place. Now, this is all, I'm just explaining this at a really high level. I'm not going into all the in-depth. This isn't a perfect explanation, basically, but I'm just giving you a picture, a quick brushstroke picture of what's going on, because I know for me, understanding a little bit of how my body works and what's going on can actually really, really help me to make changes, because I can think, oh, this is what's happening in my intestines. Therefore, I don't want to be eating food that's maybe contributing to this certain thing. So that's roughly what's happening. But on a basic level, you've got bacteria that's in the wrong place. So you've got an infection of bacteria from your large intestine in your small intestine. Your small intestine is where you can do, where you do absorb a lot of your nutrients. So imagine if your small intestine has got an infection and isn't optimal. It isn't doing its, you know, it's got a different pH. It's got, let's call them bad guys, coming in and making problems, then actually it's really going to impact your digestion and how much of nutrients you are going to be able to absorb. So it's really, really important. And when it comes to symptoms of SIBO, they would be really similar to those of IBS. And depending on the different research papers that you look at, anywhere from 4% to 75% of people who have IBS actually have some sort of SIBO infection. Now, again, I was looking at a paper just before recording this. It depends on the study. It depends on the test that you do to diagnose SIBO. You know, there's lots of different factors here, but between 4 to 75%, according to one kind of a meta-analysis I was looking at, is of IBS cases is actually a SIBO. So even if, say, we take that middle number, we say between 4 and 75, let's say 35% of people, that's still a lot of people that actually have been diagnosed with IBS are dealing with a treatable infection. And there's something genuinely going on that is interrupting optimum digestion and all sorts. So, but let's look, what are the symptoms? If you were coming to me for a consultation in my online clinic, if the things I would be looking out for is feeling constantly bloated, especially upper bloating, so kind of underneath your chest, sort of your upper stomach, or just bloating in general. You maybe are persistently constipated or persistently have sort of loose stools, diarrhea type ends, and you just have a lot of bother with your bowels. You're feeling tired. There might be some anxiety, some depression, or more severe mental health stuff going on. And there'd be signs of other nutrient depletions. Your nails aren't strong. Your skin's not great. Your hair's maybe thin or dry or falling out. You feel really, really tired. Your stomach is uncomfortable. Various different factors. And those are, there's other symptoms, because again, if you are not absorbing or able to absorb your nutrients properly, that can have quite a long chain effect. In terms of immediate symptoms, those would be the things that I would look out for. Also, sometimes with SIBO, people that maybe feel worse when they take probiotics or fermented foods, maybe you started making sauerkraut, hearing from me, Kezia said it's so healthy, and then you start eating it and you're like, oh, this makes me worse. That could be to do with SIBO and various different things. So those would be a couple of the symptoms, but it looks a lot like IBS. Just a really bad form of IBS that's quite persistent. And it might be that there was a trigger, like you maybe had an operation, or you were sick and you took a bunch of antibiotics, and ever since then you've never been the same again. Or maybe it happened, you know, maybe someone had their ileal cecal valve removed for various reasons. You know, there can be different triggers, certain medications, having a baby, that can be enough of a trigger. But often it's kind of prolonged medication, specifically your PPI, so your omeprazole or lansoprazole, your things that reduce stomach acid, that's going to make you more susceptible. Certain narcotic medication as well could kind of set you up for that a lot more. You've got your antibiotics medication as well, that can increase the kind of likelihood of it. If you have low iron, like chronically low iron, Often as well, the research shows that women are more susceptible to this, unfortunately, especially older women, and again, people on those specific drugs. So those are the things I would look out for if you were coming to me, if you were bloated all the time, if you may be on omeprazole or another kind of PPI, or you'd been on long-term painkillers, you were bloated a lot of the time, had constipation or diarrhea, and had maybe been diagnosed with an IBS type symptom, or were undergoing those kind of investigations, but everything else was turning out normal. Maybe you've had a colonoscopy or sigmoidoscopy, everything's normal, but your symptoms aren't normal. Your symptoms are consistent and uncomfortable. So that's what I would look out for. And it is worth saying, that's why I wanted to do this podcast, really, was just around if you do have IBS and like me, you're really struggling, because there's different levels to IBS. Some people get occasionally bloated and it's uncomfortable and they just have to maybe avoid eating certain foods. But for other people, can be really, really debilitating. Then I would really encourage you to find out more about SIBO and look at getting testing. So let's look at how would you test for SIBO. So as far as I'm aware, I think of all my clients that I've worked with around this, I've only had one whose gastroenterologist had heard of SIBO and was up for it within the UK. I have clients that are in America or Canada, and this is a really normal part of their medical system. And so they can get testings done through their insurance or through their gastroenterologist. But in the UK, I think if you were to chat to, I don't know of any clients who've had gastroenterologists who have chatted with them this idea of SIBO or been convinced of it or willing to test for it. So I'm not too sure if the NHS offers this SIBO test. It might do, in which case, great, but I am not clued up on that enough. But I just know from my own clients' experience that not many of their gastroenterologists that have maybe been referred to has heard of it, knows about it, or has been willing to offer tests. So the often route that you have to go down with the SIBO is doing a private test. The tests that you can get are about £130, and they would be a breath test. So basically you would take a certain solution, like a lactulose solution, swallow it down, and then literally breathe into a bag, and the air in the bag is what gets tested. It's insane. But that would probably be the best way of doing it. And with clients that I've had, ideally you would test before to see, just to see, does it look like there's maybe a SIBO going on? Again, my job isn't necessarily to diagnose things like this, but I will run those tests just to give me an indication. And a client can then always take that to a gastroenterologist and they can discuss it there. But also then to test once you've maybe done a certain protocol or approach or strategy to help target this potential small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So you can do testing. I generally recommend people do a lactulose testing. You can do it at home, but you can also get a glucose test as well. I think lactulose testing is slightly more accurate. And you can also, there is another type of test available that would have to be done in hospital. But I've not known anyone in the UK to have that, or even any of my Canadian or, I should say Australian, not Australian, American. American clients tend to have a more of a lactulose testing, but this is a relatively new infection, disease thing, whatever. It's probably more of an infection than disease. This is new, so there's still ongoing research on this, ongoing research about the most specific and sensitive forms of testing. So this is still an ongoing thing, and that's partly why it hasn't quite filtered down in the UK anyway to our more NHS system, because this is a really exciting area, but it has been all probably in the last 15 to 20 years that we've realized this. But it is amazing, because if you've been struggling with digestive issues for a long time and you feel like you've tried everything, you've made the dietary changes, you feel like you're getting nowhere, then you're not crazy. There's probably this kind of thing going on. So test wise, I recommend probably going privately. I think you can buy tests directly from a company, but you probably need a practitioner like myself to interpret them and to create a protocol from them. So I will link to one of the labs that I've used, and I'm pretty sure you can just order the test on your own. So if you just want to go this solo, you probably could do, but you might not understand the test results. So what I do with my clients is they'll order this as part of my 14-week program of working with them, and then we'll interpret it, create a plan of action around it to help support it. and then potentially test again to see if we have removed or reduced that sort of potential infection. So testing, it's not one of those things that you really know you have necessarily without tests. And I've had clients that I haven't tested this for just because finances were an issue. And we've just assumed, made an educated guess that this is roughly what's going on and made a plan of action accordingly. And they have felt better. So you can also do that. You don't have to test. I just think sometimes it can be really, really helpful. And also what you do for SIBO in terms of supporting it from a nutritional perspective can be some quite big dietary changes. So sometimes people need the motivation that comes from a lab test in front of them. So what do you do about it if this is what you have? Well, from a conventional standpoint, you can have antibiotics to treat it. So I've got a client at the moment who is from another country. They were diagnosed with SIBO and given several rounds of antibiotics to help with their SIBO. So that is one way of doing it. Again, it's a bacterial infection, so antibiotics can play a role. Obviously, that's not what I do with my clients because I'm not a doctor, I'm a holistic nutritionist. So I use food and herbs and all of those kind of things to help with that. But this isn't my option is best and antibiotics is a rubbish option. The only thing with using antibiotics that I make clients aware of is that the remission rate is very low the recurrence rate is very high, because often the reason you would get SIBO can be linked with how you eat and the foods that you're eating. So if you don't actually change any of the root causes for getting the infection, if you're still using your PPI medication, if you're still eating sugary foods, if you've still got quite a poor diet, if you're still quite stressed out, if your stomach acid is still low, you could have the antibiotics to get rid of the infection. But if you've never dealt with the contributing factors that have led to the infection in the first place, then the chances of recurrence of that infection is really, really high. So that's why SIBO is often known as a bit of a beast to get rid of, because it's quite a high recurrence rate. But that's often if people choose to have the antibiotic option, but they don't have any dietary support or any actual changes. So if they don't change any of the root factors, the root causes of them getting it for the first place, then it is going to come back. And I see that time and time again. It's like with thrush. If you never actually deal with the reason you have thrush in the first place and you just constantly take creams or medication, if it gets bad, you're going to constantly get a recurrence of thrush infection because you've never gotten to the reason of why you have excess yeast going on, if that makes sense. So, but there is loads that you can do about it. So from my perspective, what I would tend to do, if you came to me, we ran some tests, or we just had a strong suspicion that that was going on, then we would look at making some dietary changes. So what we want to do with SIBO especially is you want to remove a lot of the carbohydrates. So you want to focus on a slightly lower carbohydrate diet and ideally lower in FODMAP. So lower FODMAPs would be lowered fermentable carbohydrates. So what generally I would tend to do, so the clients I've got at the moment with SIBO, everyone is slightly different, but generally I would remove gluten and dairy for sure. And then we ideally look for having a period of time of being grain-free or just really low on the grain front. So they might just have rice or maybe some gluten-free oats, but they're not eating a lot of grains. And they are maybe, if they know onion and garlic upset them, they would avoid that. And they really focus on eating good quality proteins, animal proteins, fish, cooked vegetables. I'd also probably steer them away from a lot of raw vegetables as well, because that can be quite difficult to digest. And really weird, and focus on things like eggs, egg yolk, some healthy proteins, maybe some collagen powder, some good quality oily fish, some organic grass-fed beef. I'd also steer them clear of things like legumes as well, if they felt like that was problematic for them, unless they were vegetarian, in which case they would need to really be soaked and sprouted. And they would eat things like nuts. And it would be really looking at a kind of more paleo-ish approach, but kind of paleo-ish would be the word. It really depends on the client. Obviously, if you're a vegetarian, then you need to take a different approach because you're not going to be eating a lot of meat. Some people also feel fine with legumes, or, you know, culturally that legumes would play an important role But we'd really look at that. We'd also want to remove alcohol for a period of time and any other foods that look disruptive. So you want to get rid of a lot of these more fermenting carbohydrates, which are often really good for your body. So these fermentable carbohydrates, these kind of low FODMAP foods, often removes a lot of the vegetables that are really good for you. But SIBO, we want to remove anything that is going to cause this, contribute to this fermentation in the gut. That's part of why you could be so bloated and uncomfortable. So that's one of the things that we would look at. Obviously, sugar, you'd want to remove refined sugar as well and really have a limit to your fruit intake as well. You don't want to be endlessly eating strawberries and blueberries and bananas again, because that sugar can feed the bad bacteria. So you're really looking to remove a lot of the food that this bacteria would use. So it would use a lot of those fermenting carbohydrates found in vegetables and grains. That would be food for this bacteria, the SIBO kind of different strains of bacteria, but also refined sugar is going to be kind of fuel to the fire of this infection. So that's generally the dietary approach I would take. And then you would want to do something to help clear out that infection. So I would tend to use herbs like berberine and oregano, and garlic is a great, just like raw garlic is a great sort of antimicrobial, antibacterial thing. I often use a blend of different kind of herbal support to help remove that. You do need to be quite careful. I only do that for probably about 21 days ish, depending on the person, because just because things are herbal doesn't mean you can just use them. And I actually have had a few clients that have really buggered a lot of stuff up by just endlessly taking oregano oil, thinking they have candida overgrowth. And so they just take tons of oregano oil for months, and it can really cause problems to your digestive tract. So this is, again, this is a whole area. I really recommend working with someone closely like myself or someone else that you feel comfortable with, or you just need to be really on it with your research and with your research and reading. But this can often feel totally overwhelming, which is why people tend to work with me, because I make it clear and easy. So those are little things you can do. This will be dietary changes, there'll be herbal support and some supplement support. So getting things to help with digestion, whether it's enzymes or stomach acid, or supporting bile production. We're using herbal bitters. I might introduce a probiotic or a specific strain to help with that. And there's lots of different things you can do. If you have a really bad infection that's not going anywhere, you can do something called elemental diet, which I've only ever used once in my clinic. It worked quite well, but it's quite extreme. But know that this is not in your head, that there is something you can do. If you are bloated all the time and uncomfortable and tired, and maybe your skin is struggling, your mental health is struggling, you just feel like you're not digesting your food and you feel like you're eating healthy, then it could be that there's this potential of SIBO going on. Again, between 4 and 75%, I know that's a big range, but you know, the research is still emerging on this. 4 and 75% of people with IBS have this SIBO infection. Again, it's not something that is mainstream in our NHS system, so it's good to go private, work with someone like me, work with someone nearby, get tests, get a protocol up that's going to work for your body. But you can do something about it. I've had clients who have tested before and have tested afterwards, after working together, and this is an infection that you can shove out the picture, because it is pretty grim to live with. But I hope this has been helpful. I know this has been a bit more of a technical episode, but I really want my whole goal and aim of this podcast is to really educate and equip you so that you can carry on living the life that you want to live and feeling good and having the education that you don't have to tolerate feeling crap anymore. And talking about SIBO is really important. I do have more blogs and stuff that I will link to in the show notes all about this, that you can find out more. Otherwise, if you have any questions, you can head over to Facebook or Instagram and just search Supernaturally Healthy and follow me there, and you can ask me on there. And if you are struggling with IBS and you don't know if you have SIBO, but you do know you have IBS or IBS type symptoms, and you're bloated all the time, then don't forget to join me in my free workshop, which is What to Eat to Beat IBS. And I'm going to be diving into this, all this kind of information, a lot more. It's going to be an hour free training workshop where I'm going to equip you and educate you on what you can eat to beat the IBS, beat the bloating, and feel really, really good. So that is happening, I think, on the 24th of June. Head over to supernaturallyhealthy.org/WP/IBS. So head to my website, supernaturallyhealthy.org/WP /IBS. And that will take you to the page. Sign up, join me in the free workshop. It's an hour of your time and will be really helpful, practical, in-depth. You can ask questions and it'll just be a lot of fun. So thank you for joining me. I really value your time. I value you choosing to listen. And I'm so in awe and proud that you are choosing to do something about your health. Go against the grain, go against the norm that we have in our culture of being, of not taking ownership basically of our health. You are, by listening to this podcast, you're taking ownership of your energy, your health, your digestion, your future. And I just think that's awesome. So well done you, have an amazing day and I'll see you next week. Bye. For a while and you are fed up and a little bit sick and tired of feeling tired, bloated, exhausted, with your hormones that are a little bit haywire, your belly a little bit out of control, and you actually feel like you are trying to make some changes when it comes to your food and lifestyle, but you're not actually seeing the results, then I would love to invite you to come and work with me. So I work with clients over about a 14-week period on a one-to-one private basis. And if you are feeling ready to make that change, to get some tailored, bespoke advice that is for your body, then join me in this 14-week program. What we do is over a couple of months is we meet regularly, we create a clear plan of action, we run relevant lab tests, and I show you what to eat so that you can get your energy and belly back for good. If you're interested and want to find out more information, then you could head over to supernaturallyhealthy.org and then just click the work with me button. That'll have all the information on there and a link for you to book your free 20-minute consultation with me as well to see if it's the right fit. If you think this is something you might be ready for, then I would just urge you to take action. One of the best things that I've done for my health is getting that tailored support, because your body isn't like anyone else's. You can't just follow some generic formula that you Google at 10 at night when you're doubled over on the toilet or can't sleep. Your body is unique and it needs something unique in order to help it thrive. So get in touch. Let me know any questions you have. Sending lots of love.